As the 2012-2013 school year winds down, one of the issues occupying the attention of state lawmakers is teacher pay. In essence, what should determine teachers' salaries in Michigan? A state house panel has approved a plan to tie teachers' pay to student performance. But as Michigan Public Radio's Jake Neer tells us, lawmakers on both sides of the aisle say they're worried the bill would strip away local control.
Bill supporters say just because someone's been teaching for a long time, that doesn't mean they're a great teacher. They say educators should be paid more if their students are making progress and less if they're not. Eaton Intermediate School District Superintendent Christine Beardsley says they're already implementing a similar system, but she says not all schools can or should adopt the same policy.
Why not allow us to then maybe lead the way and have others join as they determine their district is ready for this?
The bill would only apply to teachers hired after the law goes into effect. For the Michigan Public Radio Network, I'm Jake Neer at the State Capitol.
So let's take a closer look at the debate over teacher merit pay. Joining me is Jennifer King Rice, a professor in the Department of Education Policy Studies at the University of Maryland. She studied the impact of performance pay in the Prince George's County Public School District in Maryland. Welcome, Jennifer.
Thank you.
And Scott Moore is the superintendent of Oscoda Area Schools, where they have had a pay-for-performance program since 2007. Welcome to Stateside, Scott.
Hey, thank you very much for having me.
Jennifer, let me start with you. How does making teacher performance the primary determinant for teacher salaries, this whole performance idea, how is that a game changer?
Well, it's a major game changer because for many, many years in almost every school district across the country, teacher pay has been a function of experience, years of experience, and master's degrees. Well, degree earned, master's or above. So teachers are on a set salary schedule in almost every district without much attention to teacher performance or student performance. So linking teacher pay with student performance is really a radical departure that we've been seeing over the last, say, 5 to 8 years in districts across the country.
And as you've studied this, Jennifer, what do you see as the advantages of basing teacher compensation on evaluations of student performance as opposed to the experience and degrees as in the past?
Well, you know, the major problem with basing pay on experience and education level or degrees is that there's very little compelling evidence to show that those credentials are actually linked with teacher performance. In fact, we have very inconsistent evidence on that. We know that experience over the first 5 years is linked to teacher performance, but beyond that fifth year or so, we don't see many returns to additional years of experience, but we're paying a lot for additional years of experience. And the same goes for degrees, that the evidence is very limited on the systematic relationship between advanced degrees and teacher performance. The only place that we've really found consistent evidence on that relationship is master's degrees in the area of mathematics for teachers teaching math. Other than that, the evidence is pretty inconsistent. So we're paying a lot.
I think Jennifer's right on with her point, too, in that respect, because she's able to articulate and is doing a very good job of trying to say, in the first 5 years when a teacher comes in and starts, their inexperience is going to show. But after 5 years, you absolutely should have some sort of indicator how effective the teacher is going to be or not. And that's why, for us, we're in a situation when we hire a teacher, it's a five-year interview, especially now that we've added an additional year on the tenure piece, because it used to be 4 years before you're in tenure in Michigan, now it's five. So we tell them it's a five-year interview. And we've been in the process in Oscoda since about 2007, the year that we implemented merit pay, where we're not going to be keeping teachers who are ineffective, whether they're tenured or whether they're not tenured. And we've reduced our staff by approximately 12% of ineffective teachers over the course of that time, which is significant. And at the same time, we implemented merit pay. And what ended up happening is our merit pay program in Oscoda at $25,000 a year spread across a pool of 100 people. As an economist, which is where my background is, the incentive to move for merit pay is not what we attribute our success to. We attribute our success to the people who wanted to stay here and bought into the philosophy of putting students first. Those are where we're going to end up having the growth points, because the hardest thing when we utilize any type of saying student performance or teacher performance is the quantitative measures that we're looking at to determine what success is. And my concern is
that success in Oscoda, which is 80% free and reduced lunch rate, which we qualify to give all of our students, you know, 100% free lunch, you know, success looks different here than it does in Bloomfield Hills for some of our kids. Or, you know, success looks different in Flint than it does in different places, or Detroit. And to say, all right, this is what we're going to do, and take that decentralization out of it and have a centralized component for, we're not anywhere near that, because just last week, the state of Michigan came out with the MDE saying on the MEEP for 8th grade math, 22% of the kids were proficient in Oscoda. Well, we were number one in our county, yet 22% of our kids were proficient. So now when we're looking at how we're going to dictate what people are paid, we're going to be really, really got to be cautious, because we're totally diminishing the incentive for people to want to get into education, because it's such a hard thing to measure. And I'm sorry if I cut you off, Jennifer, but I thought you did a really nice job of pointing out that first 5 years is
critical. No, and it's good
critical.
To hear your experience. Yes, they really are.
And I can hear from what you're saying, Scott, is you're glad you've gone to merit pay because of the teachers that stayed around for it and the caliber of those teachers. But it sounds like the idea of how to actually measure it is what's causing concern. And Jennifer, what have, if, from where you sit and the work you've done with the Department of Education Policy Studies there at the University mm-hmm. of Maryland, you've looked at this. Do you think a statewide mandate like the one that is being considered in Lansing is wise?
You know, I think a statewide mandate of anything in education is very tricky, because education is such a local provision, and mm-hmm. different communities differ dramatically, and context matters. I mean, we know those things, and those are some of the reasons that it's so difficult for us to find any across-the-board effects of different kinds of policies, because context does matter. So I'm always a little leery about broad sweeping policies like that, in part because the devil is in the details. I mean, we can mandate performance-based pay, but what really matters is how these plans are designed, what they're incentivizing, whether it's actually improved performance or, unfortunately, sometimes gaming the system.
She's 1,000% right, because we were also the first district to implement a teacher evaluation tool, which I think was much more significant in terms of moving us to have a teacher evaluation tool that was based significantly on student achievement data. My concern is, I'll go back to that 8th grade math meet. Just last week, MDE came out with a memo that said 6 of those questions weren't good, weren't appropriate, were taken off. Now you take, you know, I told you 22% of the kids were proficient. Well, there's only a chance of 4, you know, it's a multiple choice, A, B, C, D, you know, where chances kids can get that. And I know that's not a statistical correlation, but we kept saying all along, hey, there's something wrong with this test. There's something wrong with this test. Mm. And when you deviate and take the denominator 6 percentage points, that changes everything when you're being ranked top to the bottom. So
but, you know,
until,
I think the most,
go ahead,
the
Jennifer,
most promising
yeah.
models, though, are the ones that don't rely just on test scores. You know, as I look across the country at different teacher incentive models, they vary considerably, and some of them use lots of different measures. So, yeah. you know, there certainly are student test scores, but some merit pay models use classroom evaluation, standards-based evaluation.
And that's part of what ours is, too.
And does the evaluations, and who pays for that?
There are some standards-based evaluation systems that are out there on the market, and that's an excellent question. Often, who pays for that is principals themselves out of their own hides.
Whoa.
Because principals are generally trained, and other school administrators are trained to carry out these evaluations. They're certified evaluators. The district typically pays for the certification and the trainers to come in, but then the principals, this gets folded into their job, and they already do some of this in most school districts, but the number and intensity of the evaluations when it's linked to performance-based pay, you know, the stakes obviously go up, and as does the demands on time of administrators. So it is extremely taxing, and, you know, my view is that administrators need to be compensated in some way for this additional demand, either with new personnel in the school to help alleviate some of their other work, or with additional pay.
So districts who are strapped for cash, are these teacher pay incentives really worth it? Does it provide bang for the buck?
Well, that's a million-dollar question. I don't think we have enough evidence on the impact of performance-based pay systems yet, because they're new and the models have been so varied from district to district that it's hard to actually know what the treatment is when you're trying to assess the effectiveness of these models. But they vary in terms of the bases for pay, you know, whether it's student test scores or, standards-based evaluation or teachers who take on leadership roles or engage in particular kinds of professional development. Many of these models also pay teachers for those sorts of things. The size of the reward varies. I mean, you heard Scott talk about the size of their reward. In Prince George's County, the award could be up to $10,000 per teacher per year. So that was
very significant. Now, that can definitely alter some behavior potentially.
Well, it sure can. And we know teachers respond to financial incentives just simply by watching how many teachers go and get master's degrees.
Absolutely. And
they change their behaviors to get those rewards in the salary, in the current salary schedule. So presumably they would change their behavior to get rewards that might be embedded in performance-based pay.
I think that the teachers that we're working with now, it's so much different than it was. See, and I have the good fortune, you know, I'm from Oscoda. I went to school in Oscoda, and I've been in different places, but I'm back now. And I know that 25 years ago when I got an education compared to where I am now, we're so much further ahead in terms of what the teachers are committing to doing. And, you know, the commitment that we're seeing of the people who are still here, because you got to keep in mind the legislators already, you know, imposed, you know, top to bottom rankings of teachers. Seniority is no longer a reason to keep somebody if you're going to do a layoff. You keep the most effective teachers.
And isn't that something we're seeing?
That is already in place for us. So I don't know that we need to really go and change this again, because we haven't even gotten the evaluation piece given to us yet, because they passed it as a law. The governor formed a council, and the council is yet to release, which I'm hopeful that in June they will, on what the recommendation is. But we've already have so many provisions in place, and there's been so much change in our landscape in Michigan just in the past few years, that I think that some of it just needs some time to grow and breathe into society and see what can happen for us.
And that's a nice point, that I think the staging of teacher policy has been really overlooked. So we don't really, when we sort of layer policy on top of policy on top of policy, it's hard to sort out, you know, what's actually having an impact and
what works and what doesn't.
And making it one size fits all, it
doesn't work.
It's something
highly problematic.
Delicately put, Jennifer. From both of you, I guess, as clearly and as directly as you can tell me, and I'll start with you, Jennifer, does merit pay for teachers improve student performance?
The clear answer is we don't know. We don't know. We simply don't have the evidence yet to tell us that it does. We do know some things about how performance pay may affect the work environment, how it might affect teachers' classroom performance, and how it affects their effort. But we don't know how those things translate into improved student performance. And time will tell if we, you know, implement these things in very carefully monitored settings, and we evaluate them along the way. I think we can learn some really important lessons about what components and what design features of performance-based pay may, in fact, lead to student performance.
And Scott,
but we need to be careful because, again, I can't say it enough times, context matters. One model is not going to work everywhere. We know that.
And Jennifer has a much broader range of experience with merit pay than I do. I have my example here that I've lived in for 5 or 6 years, but outside of that, my frame of reference is sort of limited in scope in respect to merit pay. We created ours, we implemented it at the same time that we did a lot of other things, and we've had a lot of growth and success, and, you know, I can't attribute the success to merit pay in any form of good conscience, because I don't think that's what drove us. I think it's the people that we have that remained through a change initiative that have driven us to be successful. And, you know, I think it comes down to the responsibility that we all have when we decide that we're going to get into education, that it's a service. And, you know, at the other end of it, you still have to provide for your families. And people who get into education, you know, hopefully we want them to have those family values and to be able to provide security for them. And I think it's such a challenging thing to measure that when we step into this and we say, hey, we're going to rank you on something that there's so many external factors that you can't control, from the child's home life all the way down to, you know, what textbook you're teaching to, you know, or what curriculum base you're using or what computer application you have access to. When you start looking at all those extraneous things that go into it, I think it's just very dangerous to start saying, you know what, we're going to take this incentive away from educators too, because we're seeing a trend, at least in the people that I work with, that, you know, they're not encouraging people to get into education in the same way, because a lot of that incentive to get into it has been diminished. And if we keep putting policies and laws into place that make it seem like the people who are educating, you know, aren't giving it their all. You know, we got to keep in mind, education started to teach values. And when we got to have that part in place. And it's not always the hard quantitative numbers, which that's what merit pay is all about. So there's a happy balance out there. I just don't think that we're in a position yet where we need to be shoving this down on people in conjunction with everything that's already been placed on us right now.
And I agree with most of that. I think that, you know, merit pay may have a place in dominant teacher pay policies across the country as we move forward and we learn more about it. But we need to proceed very carefully.
Yeah, we're nowhere near there right now.
I couldn't agree more with Scott that we need better measures. But we also need to recognize that there are some excellent, excellent teachers out there who deserve to be paid more than they're paid. And there are also
absolutely.
Some teachers out there who need signals that they're not making the mark and shouldn't automatically be getting raises because they've logged another year.
Mm.
So I think we, you know, to some extent, and I'm not at all an advocate that we should or are anywhere near ready to shift over from a single salary schedule to a complete merit-based pay system.
Right.
But I do
see, and I agree, and that's why things like as we're negotiating our contracts now, we try and put in their provisions that if you're not effective or highly effective, you're not eligible for step increases or pay increases. You know, I mean, so we're trying to do those things at the local level already.
Because that's assuming we have measures of effectiveness.
That's back to that measure
and
the metrics.
It's back to the measurement issue. So no matter how we talk about effectiveness, we end up, you know, stepping in the hole of, you know, we don't have good measures. My own view is that we need to use multiple measures to capture the
Absolutely.
Different things teachers do, that schools aren't all about student achievement. And I know that sounds like heresy, but we teach a lot in schools that can't be measured on standardized tests. And we need to recognize those other lessons as very valuable and very important in what we do and in education systems, and not let those things get lost in the, you know, the demand for accountability and the demand for good effectiveness measures. So we need multiple measures, some that capture what we can test and some that capture what we can't test directly, but, you know, that involve observing teachers and looking at graduation rates and, you know, monitoring how our lowest performing, most disadvantaged students are progressing through the system and how educators are helping them make progress. So we need to get our hands around, you know, that range of different measures of effectiveness to really have good rewards for both decisions about how teachers move through the standard salary schedule, as well as any effort to pay them for performance.
Jennifer King Rice is a professor at the Department of Education Policy Studies at the University of Maryland, and Scott Moore is the superintendent of Oscoda Area Schools. Thank you so much to both of you for sharing your insights and talking with us today on the show.
Thanks so much for having me.